Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. So it's Pledge Week. So at the time of this recording and posting, it is day one of the WFYI Spring Pledge Drive. So if you are a longtime listener or a new listener, welcome. Please show your support to WFYI by going to WFYI.org/give. And if you are a Film Sociology regular, usual suspect, if you're a film fan, please show your support by supporting Film Sociology and all the other programs here at WFYI. WFYI.org/give. We will dip into the archives a little bit, a special pledge show. So we'll pick out two of my favorite interviews, a short one and an epic one. You'll hear about those in a little bit. But first, I want to start with dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. But actor Michael Lerner, and I'm happy to say Academy Award-nominated actor Michael Lerner, passed away earlier this week. Credits going all the way back to the 1960s. So 60 years. And this is another example of that guy who gets recognition, and then his name is committed to memory. He received an Academy Award nomination, Best Supporting Actor nomination for Barton Fink, and well-deserved. But this was a guy who did a slew of TV shows and a slew of movies. First noted film from 1970, Alex in Wonderland, was in The Candidate. Oh, my gosh, I'm going through a lot of TV here. Busting, Newman's Law from 1974, Hang Up, lots of TV, man. Outlaw Blues, God, I forgot he was in Outlaw Blues. That was one with Peter Fonda and Susan St. James that was on early cable constantly. The Other Side of Midnight, Golden Girl, which we had reviewed recently, that is now out on Blu-ray from Kino Lorber, so lovely to see that again. The Baltimore Bullet, Borderline, Strange Invaders, and going all the way up to, we're still in the late 80s with a slew of TV vibes. Oh, yeah, Arnold Rothstein in John Sayles' 8 Men Out from 1988. First off, all Criterion films, or actually all John Sayles films should be Criterion treated. But he's so good in that. I couldn't find the audio. I should have gone down to the E section of the library. And hearing him as Arnold Rothstein talk about how he was not allowed to play baseball as a child because he was the fat kid. And now those same people that turned him down approach him with their hats in their hands. And so Arnold Rothstein, his presence looms over the entire film. And big kudos to Michael Lerner on that. That's a great film. Of course, shot in Indianapolis, some of it. And my father-in-law's hand with the cigar is in that film as well. Harlem Nights from 1989, Maniac Cop 2, that's right. And then Jack Lipnick in Barton Fink in 1991. Newsies, Amos and Andrew, No Escape, which was also put out on Blu-ray recently. Where he was the warden, The Road to Wellville, Radioland Murders, A Pyromaniac's Love Story, Girl in the Cadillac, he was Mayor Ebert in the God-awful Godzilla, yep. Safe Men, Celebrity, the film version of the Mod Squad, 29 Palms. He was, of course, Fulton in Elf, so, you know, we'll see him every Christmas. But yeah, a lot of stuff. And it was one of those guys, I'm trying to figure out the last thing I saw him in, and I think it might have been A Serious Man from 2009. Oh yeah, Atlas Shrugged, Mirror Mirror. So yes, hot scrolling here at Film Sociology. Your pledge dollars at work right now. So yeah, so salute to Michael Lerner, man. Thank you for all of your work. All right, friends. This week, I saw Renfield. And this could have been so much more, or I said this could have been so much less than what we got to see. And this has been a big push because of Nicolas Cage playing Dracula. Of course, Nicholas Hoult is Renfield in this. Now, with the exception of Pig, and I don't really count Pig, I've missed a lot of the over-the-top Nicolas Cage performances, like Mandy and some of the more recent ones. I love Pig. That was an understated performance from Cage. I think now he's getting cast in things, and he's probably asking the director off the record or on the record, you know, to what level of Cage do you want? And he gets to choose some scenery in here as Dracula. The whole thing with Renfield in this film, and this is from Chris McKay, who gave us the Lego Movie, among other things. We start with Renfield at a group therapy session and how he's in an abusive relationship with his master. Go figure. It's a cute thing. And there's that aspect of it. And I thought if we had done the group therapy session later in the film, if we see the... We don't get as much Cage as you like. Holt is fine in this. I mean, he's you know, and there's a moment where they recreate the meeting of Renfield and Dracula from the Todd Browning film. I think they just superimpose their faces over the two actors. But there's Renfield in group therapy, and there's Dracula who needs fresh blood, and then there is out of really not necessary a. Because they're in an abandoned hospital in New Orleans, there's this whole plot involving the local crime lord and the New Orleans Police Department with everybody's favorite cinematic New Orleans cop, Awkwafina, who is in this one as well. There's this whole about the corruption of the police department and finding Dracula winds up taking out some of the henchmen for the crime family. Ben Schwartz is the son of the crime lord, played by Sheree Agdashu, who's stunning and looks great in suits, but is absolutely wasted in this film and really not needed. You could have gone a lot further with a relationship between Dracula and Renfield, but that's not this film. It's a lot of shootouts and some really silly, bloody CG. I have to give credit to the AV Club of The Onion. In their review, they refer to, because Renfield has to eat insects, and him eating spiders and cockroaches gives him a Popeye-like effect. You know, two cockroaches, and he can fly around and tear off limbs and have these over-the-top fight scenes, which, again, a lot less. You could have had a lot less. And about... two-thirds of the way through the film, Dracula shows up at the group therapy session, and it does not go well for the other patients. I'll just put it that way. But if you kept with the relationship of the two men, and then the Awkwafina character, who could be the third wheel, and Renfield trying to get his own life going, Anyway, I had an independent film in mind, and what we have is a very bloody, violent Universal film that's very heavy R, and that's fine. but you could have streamlined this, and the film's only 90 minutes, so that's another thing it's got going for it. It just could have been a lot more for me, but apparently they didn't make this film for me, so. If you want over-the-top acting from Nicolas Cage, you got it. And if you want a lot of blood and bullets and silly fighting, that's in here, too. So I just wish they had scaled it down a bit. So, yeah, Renfield, that opens this week. We're going to go around the horn, and then we're going to go into the archives for an interview, and then we'll grab a pencil. So you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. A couple of films on video of note from IndiePix from Portugal is a film called Sadness and Joy in the Life of Giraffes. And this is the story of a 10-year-old girl and her living teddy bear named Judy Garland, who's a guy in a bear suit with a mouth of a sailor, and her trying to do a research paper on giraffes. Her dad is stressed out over money. Mom is gone. And there's this weird road trip adventure that happens with the girl and her teddy bear about wanting to buy the Discovery Channel. They wind up half an hour into the film going on this road trip through, I want to say downtown Lisbon, and random encounters with strange characters. They go into not a bank job, but wanting to demand the possession of the Discovery Channel. The Prime Minister shows up, Anton Chekhov shows up. Imagine a road trip film for kids that's more Jojo Rabbit than Homeward Bound. And there's a whole thing at the end that's a little unnerving, but I understand why they did it, of the breakup between the girl, little girl, and her teddy bear. And the way it is handled is a little blunt, but I understand for that, for the tone of this film, it goes with it. So if you're into what looks like a kid's film, but it's not quite, you can check out Sadness and Joy in the Life of Giraffes. Like I said, more Jojo Rabbit, more especially the foul-mouthed teddy bear, which is an old grizzled guy in a bear suit. And also a documentary from Film Movement called The Mission, which is about the Latter-day Saints, of course, and their missionaries going from Utah. And in this case, we follow a few young people going from the United States to Finland. And so we get things about the lifestyle change. We get to see the kids before they leave for Finland. Interesting that I think we have an image of the Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Mormons, thanks to the musical. And that's still a lot of fun to watch. But we get to see one of the boys skeet shooting with his family, with his gun-toting family, and a girl jamming to music in a car with her sister. This is before they have to wear the white shirts and all the rules and have to live together, and they can never break each other's companionship. Sort of, you are paired up. And they have a year and a half that they have to do in Finland. So we get the fish-out-of-water aspect of it. And then they're out on the street trying to strike up conversations with people, or they have their little stand, and you get to see the harsh realities of they don't get that many books out to people, and they get yelled at from random folks. One of the Americans says how this is so not like college, and we get to see more doubt than we expected. I think we're used to they're on the street. And if you've ever encountered a Mormon on a street corner or just walking, they have a very solid front. They don't take it personally if you turn them down or if you're going to be rude to them. I've seen this. And they don't let it bother them. And so the fact that we get to see more doubt, especially because they're new at this, that was enlightening. I have to admit that. So. So anyway, it's worth checking out. It's not like it's a non-film movement called The Mission. And, we get a little peek behind the process and the life that these kids have chosen and how it's not always it's cracked up to be. So The Mission, out on Film Movement. Okay. I know the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin is still under, construction because of the storm. So those, everything over there has been delayed, and no word on reopening yet. Over at IU Cinema on Friday the 14th at 7 p.m. from 2014 as a part of the Native Woman in Cinema series Drunk Town's Finest. Saturday, April 15th at 4 p.m. from that same series Pure Grit from 2021. Saturday, April 15th at 7 p.m. from 2014's Native Women in Cinema, Gone with the River. Sunday, April 16th at 1 p.m., National Theater Live's The Crucible. Tuesday, April 18th at 7 p.m. from 1977, The Last Wave. Wednesday the 19th at 4 p.m., Do It in the Dark from the Forever Queer Community Memory Survival Series. And then Wednesday, April 19th at 7 p.m., The Rebound, A Wheelchair Basketball Story. Thursday, April 20th at 7 p.m. from 2020, Caterpillars. Friday, April 21st, 1 p.m., The Future of African Filmmaking. And at 7 p.m. on the 21st, Distrances. All of that is happening at IU Cinema over at the Tibbs Drive-In on Screen 1, Super Mario Brothers and Champions. Screen 2, Air and John Wick Chapter 4. Screen 3, Renfield and Cocaine Bear. Wow, there you go. And Screen 4, Suzum and 65 at the Tibbs Drive-In. And over at the Skyline Drive-In this weekend, Super Mario Brothers movie and Shazam, Fury of the Gods. And, of course, The Silence of the Night is happening on April 28th. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Okay, once again, we're in pledge mode. So if you are a film fan of any kind, please go to WFYI.org/give to show your support for Film Sociology. And with that in mind, I'm going to share from the archives. It's a classic. It's one of the heavy hitters here at Film Sociology, my chat with Tommy Wiseau. Your pledge dollars at work, WFYI.org/give. And thank you. Enjoy. Joining me on Film Sociology is auteur, because you are a man of many skills, Tommy Wiseau. How are you, Tommy?
Hi, how you doing, Moss? You?
Doing great. Now, this is going to be your second appearance, if I remember correctly, at IU for The Room. How was it the last time you were in town?
Oh, we have such a groovy time that they decided to invite us again, and I'm thrilled. And first of all, I'd like to say thank you to all the fans there, and hopefully we'll have a groovy time, and everybody's invited.
Well, we will be there as best we can.
Sure.
So how did you get interested in cinema?
Well, that was a long time ago, believe it or not.
Are you okay?
I am okay. My phone is ringing right now. I apologize.
That's okay. I thought it was a submarine for just a minute.
No problem. You have a great sense of humor. I like that.
Thank you.
To respond to your question, I used to want to sing, believe it or not, and some people actually, I can sing, but never mind about that. Film has always was in my heart, it was in the sense and always would be, because image, people remember, et cetera. Through all these years, I studied psychology, and this relates to, to how you can connect to people. It's a lot of stuff. We probably don't have the time. But just to briefly to tell you, my first movie actually was The Robbery Doesn't Pay. It's just a short movie I did for class. And I can tell you one thing. I got that A-. You know why it's minus?
Why is that?
Because I use a black and white and colors, and a lot of people ask me, why you use these colors? Like, why is not only one color? And I said, you know what? The reason for it is because of the, I want people to provoke people. And you see, The Room, it's the same thing. If you really translate my vision a long time ago about movies, what I see now. And again, I have a great respect for, this is just a little off from your question, but for everyone who produced the movie, because, it is what it is. It's very difficult art, what you make a big effort, and I always say you have to be detail-oriented to accomplish something. And as you probably guys know, that some people already know, it's a lot misleading about The Room, about production, et cetera, online, and hopefully people are in a few days, they will ask me direct questions if they will attend the screening. So move on, next question.
Okay, well, I was saying, to jump on what you said, yeah, regardless of what people think about whether something is good or something is bad, making a movie is really damn hard. And the fact that you know, not only wrote and directed and acted, especially in the case with The Room, I mean, it is a task to organize and get everything that, not only from a technical aspect of getting everything that you need, you know, but making sure everything is smooth on the set. How are you on the set when it comes to a director? What kind of atmosphere do you have?
I love a set, you know, but if you're, you know, I would say the set is my house, actually, the theater. I mean, if you refer to The Room, supposed to be a play. I don't know if you know that. I don't want to repeat myself because it'll be boring, but just really very quickly background of The Room. Supposed to be played first, and then I decided to, you know, write a script, etc., because of my 600 pages novel, which hopefully somebody want to publish right now, but we're working on it.
It's a 600-page novel this is based on?
Correct.
Wow.
And that was, keep in mind, again, since I'm talking to you, like I say, we don't have too much time, but very quickly, see, people don't realize this nothing happened by accident, you know, like people say, oh, this accident, that accident. For example, I'm talking as the director right now, I can create a certain ambience and I can anticipate something, but I have to plan. Without planning, you don't have it. And I don't care what you, if you, for example, does lead me to, again, to your first question about production. You know, if I don't care if you do 5 minutes movie or feature movie. Guess what? Irony of a story is, for all of you guys to listen now right now, that is the same thing. The difference is you spend more money or you make it. You know, you involve more people, but you need the beginning, you need the middle, you need the end. I rest my case. The Room is based on the 600 novel, over actually 600. So people will be surprised. And I noticed, I don't know, Matthew, if you noticed, in the past few years, people actually grasp what was creating. And again, I'm thrilled to say that I'm happy with the fans and great support. And you know, sometimes we do have a bad apple, but you know what? I just accept whatever people, you know, have comments about The Room. And again, I don't always say you have to. Actually, my motto is that if a lot of people love each other, the world will be a better place to live. By this talking from The Room, you see, it doesn't matter that. You don't have to write like The Room. And I want to stress that because a lot of people think that, oh, yeah, you have, no, you don't. You see, that's the difference between me as a director, as an actor, you as the audience as well, the listener, that you have choice. And that's what The Room is. And I think maybe that's the reason. I didn't conclude 100%, Matthew, but I'll tell you one thing, that maybe that's the reason is that people are, we have great support right now with people because they do see my vision and directly, you know. Mm-hmm. Either they'll, you know, sometimes people say, oh, I don't like this. Well, that's fine. It's nothing wrong. Same with me, you know. If I, for example, see some movie, which I don't even ask me for a name, I may drop a couple of names, maybe.
Okay.
But if I see a movie, it doesn't mean that I have to like all of it. You know, like just a segment of it, etc. Move on, next question.
Will is the book published or will it be published?
No, right now, currently, actually, I'm working with one publisher, very big guy, actually, one of the biggest publishing company. I don't know what will happen. It's up to them, you know. Again, I'm not here to criticize. I'm not here to bashing anyone. That's not my motto, you know.
Okay. Yes.
I was beat up, you know. People beat me up many times. But true fans of The Room, like in your school, you know, I'm like, I love you guys. Let me tell you this way, you know.
We're
ready, ready for pictures, and we'll have a groovy time. Move on, next question.
Where did the source for the inspiration for The Room begin? Hopefully, it's not autobiographical.
Well, let me tell you, this is from life. You see, we all have, I don't know, you have opportunity to see several times the movie or not, but the fact is that it's from life, relationships, you know, drugs issues. Just recently, I believe on CNN, I have an interview with Greg, and I say very publicly, I would say right now too, you know, between 12 and 2 in America, you have number of crime committed is very high. You may laugh with my statement, but guess what? I studied this, and this is just statistically speaking. Okay, now mostly people see the room in America midnight. So I rest my case. You may say, well, maybe yes, maybe not. But I say to you, yes, it does eliminate indirectly crime. Besides this, as you probably know, and your young audience know about it, that we do not have, and I'm very strongly about it, and I think this is message maybe for, I'm not a politician yet, but this is message for mayors of the cities, you know, across the country. You guys give young people places to express themselves, parks, trees, play footballs, you know. We don't have these places anymore. I'm trying from north to south, from south to east, or whatever, name it. It's the same issue, the same problem, you know, and it's not right, you know, because I think young person, even older person, we all have certain tendency to express ourselves emotionally through playing football or just whatever you want to do, you know, and we don't have this kind of places, you know, and that's why, you know, people are sometimes doing drastic things, and that's the gray area. What I think people should realize about the room, and I am very strongly about it, and I'm surprised the big media does not pick up this, you know, because it's true. This is the story. And move on, next question. So
no, it's all right.
I'm
it's
just
cool.
Give you a little speech here.
No, it's okay. Nobody wants to hear me talk. They want to hear you.
No, I want you to talk too. Just jump in any time.
Well,
tell me, it's enough now.
Well, say
okay. 10 more minutes. All right, move on. Next question.
Were you jilted by a woman like this in the film?
Well, let me tell you, I've been in a relationship. I will not say I was not.
Okay.
Like, I will tell you very honestly, two is better than three, but three is crowd. However, you can have three friends.
Yes.
And I will tell you one thing, that there's nothing wrong when Johnny in the movie, you know, say to Danny, it's okay to love somebody else. But the same time, it's process of learning how far you can go as a person. Mm-hmm. How far you can go, do you have to actually do something physically, or you just to say, look, I love you, man, or I love you to a girl or guy. It doesn't matter. You see, that's what the beauty in a relationship, that we understand and have respect, and how tempting it is. I've been in many situations, I don't know you guys, but we all been there, that's tempting to be very close to someone. You know, or you have certain opportunity, but then you pay for it, you know, by breaking relationships or a relationship. I believe very strongly that we've all been there. If not, I say many times that the room is a red flag. Wait a minute, why should you do when you later on you will regret it? Mm-hmm. And I don't care how strong you are, how much money you have, that's irrelevant. You know, bottom line is, you know what? Feelings you cannot buy it, Matthew. And that's the irony in the room.
Well, I say, you have people, you have now hundreds and thousands of people loving you with these screenings. You talk about a place for kids to go. When you have these screenings on campus and in theaters, you know, people have said that you single-handedly brought back the Midnight movie and the cult movie.
Right.
Well, not too much pressure, I hope.
No, I love public, and I always will. The fans, that's priority for me, you know. So it's pressure, little pressure is there, but I like it.
Now, I know right after The Room, you did the documentary, you co-directed the documentary Homeless in America, is that right?
Correct, yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know a lot of people know The Room, but you have done other things since.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the Homeless in America is a totally different topic, as you probably know about it since you asked. Is dealing with the homelessness in America. And again, you see, long story short, you cannot eliminate homelessness. And now, in since you mentioned this topic, it is what it is. As you know, in America, because of economy, actually I'm working on a new movie about relate to economy, and it's relate also to indirectly to homelessness. So again, this is the gray area. What people don't realize, and again, you see, some people say, oh, you know what, we can eliminate homelessness. Well, I have not, for you all your expert, you know, from politician to media, no, you cannot eliminate homelessness. If you look at a long time ago, let's say 200, 300 years ago, not this country, but other countries, you already have a homeless indirectly, but it was not recognized the way we recognize. But the good news is that if we learn about it, we will not have in America, which is, you know what, Matthew, it's really hurt my feelings that I see this, people actually, you know, lay down on the street in America, underneath the bridges. You know, it's sad. It mm-hmm. is very eerie situation. But the good news is that we have a lot of dedicated people, and I wish, you know, I don't wish, but I probably would do another documentary. Like, I want to expose all the people actually doing good things for homelessness, people who never been recognized for their hard work without, you know, to help these people, because it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And again, you see, I'm across America, I see this, you know, I just come back from Houston, the same thing. You know, people say, oh, we don't have a homeless. Well, I'm sorry, you do have, you know. Mm-hmm. But the good news, again, is that we can eliminate, we can help these people. And that's what I come from, you know. Homeless was, did this movie just to find out the truth, not because somebody told me. And what I discovered was pretty eerie, if you ask me. But the good news is we can improve with optimism and good spirit in America. Move on, next question.
what's the status on The House That Drips Blood on Alex?
Well, first of all, I was hired as an actor. Let me stress
right.
that. As well as only as an actor. Okay, I did not direct. They direct. That was Comedy Central. They aired it on TV and they put it online. And, you know, they're supposed to do second episode, I don't know, was pretty excited project, was paid job, of course.
Yes.
And, you know, it was good experience. They could do better, but, you see, it's not me to judge. You know, some mm-hmm. people like it, some people don't.
Well, I think what's been great is that you've been able to go from, you know, you did and I mean this as a compliment.
No problem.
I think the term melodrama gets a bad connotation. And so to go from a melodrama to documentary to horror, I mean, and just even you know, you're just acting in that, you're able to go from one genre to another.
Well, I think that's a compliment. If you ask me, you don't have to apologize. But you see, I don't call, and again, this is your statement, melodrama. You may argue that The Room partially is melodrama based on the talking, if you analyze Johnny's character. Mm-hmm. I agree, you got me on that one. But at the same time, the reason we call black comedy, again, people don't realize black comedy leading towards melodrama.
Right.
Melodrama, as you probably know, defined melodrama is based... It's more than normal.
Mm-hmm.
So you much more dramatic approach. But I don't know a story again. I will say very openly that I have some friends that they are really melodramatic, if you ask me.
We all do, Tommy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Again, this is based on my research. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I will say, you know, that hopefully we have more discussion like that. about with the fans as well, with you guys, with media, because Matthew, you're part of the media one way or the other.
Yep.
And then, you know, actually, I'd like to have a program, you know, if you guys can organize it while there, we can have big discussion, you know. So it's up to you guys. But anyway, move on. Next question.
What, I say, you talk about dark comedies, black comedies. What are some of your favorites?
What do you mean?
As far as are there other dark comedies like Dr. Strangelove or Harold and Maude that inspired you?
Well, you see, again, I inspire myself, but however, yeah, good point. I like, for example, if you look at not so much comedy or, you know, to me, comedy, let's put it this way, comedy, drama, melodrama, black comedy, whatever you define, I define as the colors. Colors means the more colors you have in within your project, in this case, The Room or other movies, even include The Homeless in America, as you mentioned, you will not just to provoke people, but it will be interesting to see your project or movie, whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, some people say, oh, this is short, this is long, whatever. But the colors for me is very important. Now, to respond to your question, I influence myself. However, I'm fond of, for example, Cleopatra with Elizabeth Taylor.
Yes.
Because, again, this is the manipulation of woman aspect in life if you compare it to Juliet in The Room. Now, Orson Welles, for example, Citizen Kane, Giants with James Dean and others. Why these people we watching, by my research, a lot of people watching from time to time, what is the reason? What is behind? Or is my case, The Room, we can say the same thing. What is behind? Is it that bad because it's good, or is it good, is it bad? Well, as you know, Matthew, bad is expression, also is good.
Mm-hmm.
In slang in America, as you know.
Yes.
If you have two guys walking, they are close friends, they will not say, oh, this is great movie. They say, oh, this is so bad, you have to see it. And again, people, I don't understand, but, you know, some of the stuff, you know, I'm just laughing because it's laughable, to be honest with you. But the bottom line is people enjoy this film, and that's the bottom line. And we have a really great discussion like we have right now. So we have 10 more minutes. Move on, next question.
Okay. I'll say, besides the documentary about the economy, is there any scripts or that you work, feature films that you have planned?
Yes, absolutely. I'm working on vampire movie as well as Alex Blood, Vampire the Alex, as well. There'll be continuous what we did with Comedy Central, but slightly different angle. As well as I'm working currently, I'm shooting The Neighbors. We are casting currently, actually today, believe it or not. So I'm working very hard to entertain people. Hopefully people have a groovy time.
I'm saying, how far is what do you think will happen next? Which one do you think will come, or is it, you know, whatever comes to you first?
Well, The Neighbors actually will be available within probably 2 months. We're doing 5 episodes, and The Economy water released before June. A Vampire, I'm working, but at the same time, I don't know if you're aware, but we'll be releasing Blu-ray of The Room, and that'll be before Christmas, as well as I'm working also on the 3D movie as well, 3D of The Room.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm doing the testing almost as we speak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we did some of it because we are, I don't know if you want to hear more about it, but just one sentence about it. We are scanning from 35mm print.
Right.
I'm referring to 3D of The Room.
Mm-hmm.
The Room with in 3D.
So the love, we're going to get even closer to the love scenes.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
So we're going to get even closer to you guys during the love scenes.
I think so.
as a director, what do you what's some of the things that you do to help out actors? I know you had a fairly young cast on The Room, but how do you approach actors from a directing standpoint? And how do you direct yourself?
Well, directing is very tough, you see. So again, I have a system of, if you refer to the room, I had a system, and now I have a system as well, that, you know, I'm doing a ratio 1-4, and basically I believe in a rehearsal process. In the room, we have like, 6 months rehearsal before we shot the room, but I don't know what the story is, but I did change the actors several times, as well the crew was changed 4 times. So a lot of actors, there's only 1-2 person who actually been with me for a long time, what you see on the big screen. But to respond to your question, I'm a very detail-oriented person, if I may say that. Yes, of course I can say that.
You just did.
but at the same time, I'm not self-centered. Let me say that too. So, my system is pretty straightforward, what I can share with you if you want to hear.
Please.
Well, you record yourself, then you watch yourself, and then you try to adjust base what you see. And I believe in adjustment, you see, at the same time, but you have to, one of the gray areas, you have to eliminate your subjective approach. So you go based as a, I am as a director, I say, what is the character saying, what he or she is doing, what's the situation? So it's the last obstacle come to your brain, and you have to divide it. You cannot combine together because then you get lost. That's my point.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see yourself, then you record again and say, okay, I like this scene. No, I have to improve that. Okay, and when you are good actors, by the way, I never say on the records that actors are good or bad. What I'm saying, sometimes they don't give us certain, they're not sharing this, they're not giving enough. What I mean by that, they're missing the colors, because any actors could be very, the best of the best. And that's why the reference to actors, some people sometimes ask me and say, can you cast this particular person because he or she make $20 million? I say, absolutely not. Because I already know that they cannot offer what I think I'm looking for. So for all of you, for all your listeners, it's not you have to be popular acting is sharing. That's basically my definition of good acting. If I can say good acting, but I try not to divide it good and bad as an actor, because I'm not a critic. I'm just going by provocation. My job as a director to provoke people positive ways if I can. So if I do that, I do a good job as far as in my hands, in my eyes. Now, again, about the system, so that's basically when I shot the room, I recorded this VHS tape, and by the way, I'm still writing the book about it, the difference between the HD and 35, because we use both cameras. I know it's laughable a little bit, but you know what? The way I see it this way, the simplicity is virtue of success. What I mean by that is very interesting. Even today, after all these years, I still cannot find there's something where people say, okay, this is the HD, this is 35, this is the difference. That's the money what you spend on 35, that's what you spend on HD. I still don't have that. And this is the thing what I said on DVD very openly, that Hollywood was confused. And I was confused myself. And people literally say, oh, he didn't know what he was doing. Again, guys, some of you guys listening to this, you're incorrect. Please ask the question. I'll be glad to explain you what I meant by that, okay? But today, what we do, like we'll be doing, for example, The Neighbors, because I'm playing one of a Charlie character, I'll be recording myself and just watch it and analyze, okay, that's what I want. That's not what I don't want. But I have also assistant as well. So I work with 2 or 3 assistants. In the room, I have like 4 different assistants. So I say, you guys watch this, you give me feedback, you know what I'm saying? So it's very hard work if you refer to directing. Acting as well, it's not easy job, but it's very, I love it, you know, I like it.
I say, tell a little bit, for those who don't know what The Neighbors is, why don't you refresh them?
Yeah, let me clarify. The Neighbors, it's a sitcom, it's TV pilot. It's, again, you see, I like variety. So we go from homeless to The Room, from vampire to The Neighbors. Matthew, you are good.
Thank you.
I know how big the sound, how they will listen to your audiences. The Neighbors is dealing with, again, relationship. It's a character, Charlie. You can go to The Room. It's theneighborssitcom.com, and you see the synopsis as well, the characters that we are currently working on right now as we speak. Yes.
Well, I say, you mentioned earlier about singing. Any plans maybe doing a musical somewhere down the line?
Actually, you know what? We actually working on the remix of their words from the lyrics from the script, and you probably hear something probably because we're working currently. Last year we did some stuff that we never published. So soon you can hear something.
I say, like you said, from stage to movies to documentaries to television, you're never bored.
No, I like variety, if you ask me. So we have two more questions. I'm sorry I have to go.
Oh, no, that's okay. I would say, has there been any movies out recently that you've been able to watch and enjoy recently?
Yes, but I will not tell you because then people are blogging about it. But I will tell you one thing. I give you one clue.
All right.
See, I make a laugh on you.
Okay.
That's great. I tell you one is dealing with, started in S, like a social. I am not telling you the name.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right. Boy, you keep us hanging.
It was very easy to find out. Come on. You know about it.
Yes, yes. I say, how was it working with Tim and Eric?
That was pretty good, yeah. They're very nice people to work and very given, but sometimes we're not on the same page, but I've been working with them for four times. Let's see, one, two, three, four times, yes. And they're a very given person and people, you know. They're very creative. That's what the entertainment is about, creation.
Tommy, thank you so much for your time. I can't wait to see you in Bloomington on Tuesday. I'll get in touch with John, and hopefully we can meet up before or afterwards.
Yeah, no problem. And also, if you need any images, whatever, let us know, and thank you.
Thank you, Tommy. Take care.
No problem. Bye. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
It's an oldie but a goodie from 2011, my interview with Tommy Wiseau, because that's just gold. And part of the reason why I can share that with you, besides the fact that it's funny as hell, is because of your membership. So please go to WFYI.org/give and show your support to Film Sociology and all the other programs here at WFYI. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching. This is something that has become a Film Sociology staple since COVID, since the lockdown. So I'm apparently not going to stop doing this. So I do want to put out a challenge, though. If you've ever contributed to Grab a Pencil, please go to WFYI.org/give and show your support to Film Sociology and all the programs here at all the shows that I am involved with and the ones I am not involved with here at WFYI. So, I'm amazed at how many people listen to this show, and I deeply appreciate it. I really do. It's been a very fun, it is a fun community, and we all check in with each other, and especially over the years where we have Facebook dialogue with people talking about their films that they've watched recently. So that's really, really cool. So, yeah, if you've ever contributed to the Grab a Pencil portion, please consider going to WFYI. No, not consider. Do it. Do it. Go to WFYI.org/give. All right, we start with Dustin, who's apparently got some time to watch some films when he's not in Hello, Dolly at Richmond Civic Theater. Intolerance, Ball of Fire, and Enter Laughing from 1967. Thank you, Dustin. Doug writes, all musicals, mostly early Warner Brothers, 42nd Street, Footlight Parade, Gold Diggers of 1933, Dames, Gold Diggers of 1937, and the pirate movie. My buddy Liz should be very happy, Doug. The way to go. Eric, by the way, Eric Bryant is directing True West, which is coming up very soon.
And Eric writes, All Quiet on the Western Front, the version from last year. Yeah, that is one, Eric, that was powerful. And that was one I watched after my best 10, and it's in my top 10 from 2022. I was visibly shaken when that film was done. So it probably also helps that I have not seen any version of All Quiet on the Western Front in decades. So anyway, thank you, Eric. A different Eric, Eric Barker, always delivers with his first and rewatches. His first view, Melvin Van Peebles' debut feature, The Story of a Three-Day Pass. And I'm so glad you got to check that out, Eric. I have the Melvin Van Peebles box set from Criterion, which I highly recommend, and that is a really good film. So I'm glad you got to check that out. The rewatches, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Ben-Hur in Remembrance of Mom at Easter. So I think of the Gore Vidal story about Ben-Hur in the celluloid closet. And Parasite twice. First, trying out Bong's monochrome version on the second Criterion disc, which is unsurprisingly its own kind of effective way to watch it. And then in color, which made me appreciate the original cinematography all the more. Thank you, Eric. Thank you for being a friend and contributing and being a good guy. Lou Harry. Lou writes, Hundreds of Beavers. Yes. Fuzzy Head. Showboat, the San Francisco Opera. Don't remember if Sensations in 1945 was last week or this week. Either way, it was over the top and amazing. Thank you, Lou. Daniel writes, Easter Parade, Ben-Hur, Victor Victoria, The Seven-Year Itch, Armageddon Time, Empire of Light, and The Devil Wears Prada. Jamie writes, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, Jumanji, The Next Level, and Confessions of a Shopaholic. Amanda went to the library. Oh, Taffy, you're going to love this. Amanda watched Foxes, which is one we have talked about, and Tex. Yes, that is the Essie Hinton film that a lot of people forget about. Don't sleep on Tex. That's a good film. Amanda also watched Wendy and Lucy, Women Talking, which is still in my top 10 from last year, Till, and there you go. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you for all that. Nikki writes Howl's Moving Castle, Up, and Dungeons and Dragons. Tracy Forner writes The Gray, Draft Day, No Country for Old Men, and Valley Girl. And I think all of those kept Tracy up at least half an hour. David writes Soylent Green and Napoleon Dynamite. Linda writes Tickets to Paradise. Jessica writes Jurassic World Dominion, We Have a Ghost, Rest Warrior, Nun, and Nun Season 2. Rest of Warrior Nun Season 2. Sorry. Tom writes, Judgment at Nuremberg. Stunning performances by Monty Cliff and Judy Garland. Expert direction, Stanley Kramer. And excellent script, Anthony Mann. Solid performances by Shell, Dietrich, Tracy, and Widmark. Only weak point, Burt Lancaster's German accent was, I'm not reading that, but it's a German insult. Lancaster didn't bother me in that film. I'm an unapologetic Lancaster fan, so that part I didn't mind. Yeah, that's a solid bench. That's a solid group of actors, and the fact that Maximilian Schell won the Oscar that year, and I think part of it was he was able to hold his own with Spencer Tracy and Montgomery Clift and Judy Garland and everybody in that film. So yeah, it's not a date film, and you should watch Bob's Burgers after watching it. But man, yeah, that's an excellent film, Judgment at Nuremberg. Terry writes, Call Me, The Shout, and The Vanishing, the original The Vanishing. Thank you, Terry. And finally, I love these questions or clarifications. Rebecca writes, I listened to the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack while doing outdoorsy stuff Sunday afternoon, if that counts. No, but it sounded cool. It has not happened in a few weeks, but I will get a question. Do documentaries count? Yes. Do animated films count? Yes. So we still have people that talk about TV series or streaming series that they watch. It's not a film, but they're sharing it anyway. So anyway, I've gotten slightly, although I might rib you a little bit. So no, Rebecca, I think listening to I'm guessing the original Broadway recording with Ian Gillan as opposed to the film score with Ted Neely.
Gosh, that reminds me. So Abdul Hakim Shabazz, usual suspect and mayoral candidate. So I can't wait till I'm able to get him back on the show. But we got to interview Ted Neely over the phone, and that was fun. That was very, very cool. And his head has not left the 60s. And even if I know I poked at him a little bit for him to say disparaging things about Sebastian Bach, who also played Christ, and he would not have any of that. He loves everybody, and everybody's great. And anyway, it was a fun interview. And he's closer to God's age than he is Jesus, being in his 60s, then in his 60s, still touring with Jesus Christ Superstar. And of course, Ian Gillan, for you fans of Deep Purple, played Christ in the original Broadway recording. So, no, I think just listening to JC Superstar outside, that's a really good thing to do. Last Sunday, I wanted to get a little bit of sun, so I had a nice glass of Irish whiskey, and I listened to Blind Faith, which I haven't listened to that album in a long time. Drinks and music outdoors, you can't beat it. So, no, it doesn't quite count, but it sounds really cool, Rebecca. So thank you for contributing. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. So, yeah, if anybody who has contributed to grab a pencil, especially the folks I just mentioned, if you could show your support to Film Sociology and WFYI, go to WFYI.org/give. And we've got one more interview I want to share. We're going to dig into the archives. It's only because she's been on my mind lately and on my TV even more. My phone interview with Padma Lakshmi. Enjoy.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Padma. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging here in Indianapolis.
I'm good. We're just we're sitting here drinking up some coffee. Very happy. Jittery people.
Well, that's good to know. When it comes to summer, what is the first dish that you think of?
Well, you know, I think there's nothing so classic in summer as ice cream. And I'm going to show you how to dress up ice cream and make it into a fabulous dessert and give your guests a coffee all rolled into one. And the recipe is so easy, but if you don't write it down, it's on Nespresso.com. Basically, Nespresso makes these great espresso machines. Their coffee machines are renowned all over the world. And they basically have a Pixie machine, which is the one I love. It comes in a lot of colors. You pop the little capsule of coffee in. It's the best possible coffee. You make the espresso. You just take a beautiful, simple scoop of vanilla ice cream, put it in a coffee cup, pour the espresso hot over it, sprinkle some chocolate chips, and drizzle some caramel sauce. That is it. You could add nuts, you could add cinnamon, you know, you could add peanut butter chips, but that's the basic recipe. And again, if your viewers are, if your listeners are driving or whatever, it's on the website. Go to Nespresso.com.
Sounds like a good movie treat as well.
It's awesome, honestly. They have this beautiful milk machine called the Arachino, and it's basically you just plug it in and it steams up the milk and gives you that foam, just like those high-end coffee bars all across Italy and Switzerland and France. It foams everything up. It steams the milk in 1 second. It's beautiful. Actually, probably about 30 seconds, but it's so easy to do.
Well, can you tell us a little bit of what's in store for season 10 of Top Chef?
Well, we haven't filmed it yet, so there's not much I can tell you. We're in pre-production right now. I think we're just all racking our brains and figuring out how we're going to top Texas from last season. I mean, we had such an incredible, incredible season, and we're just gearing to shoot. It'll probably be on the fall, and I think we're trying to shake it up again. I think you'll see a lot of surprises. I mean, Charlize Theron and Patti LaBelle were on last season, so who knows who they'll come up with this season.
Padma, we can top Texas, Indianapolis.
Sounds good to me.
So I was curious, when you see somebody cooking in a movie, do you pay extra special attention to see if they're actually doing it right?
You know, that's a great question. I do, actually. I'm a big freak about continuity because, I come from theater and I've done a couple of movies, and so I can always tell when there's not continuity or when someone's phoning it in. And, that scene in Jerry Maguire where Renee Zellweger answers the door? Watch it when they cut to his view. Her necklace is tied differently.
Ah, yes. So movie-wise, who can cook?
You know what? Stanley Tucci can cook his face off. That is not, he is not playing. Everything in Big Night is very authentic.
Great
so
film.
So can Martin Scorsese. His first student film was a film about his mom's spaghetti sauce. He gave me a copy of it. It's brilliant.
And didn't she do all the cooking in that one kitchen scene in Goodfellas?
Yes. That's an incredible scene.
So anytime we're going to see you in a movie anytime soon?
I have a couple of offers, but my problem is my scheduling. You know, you have to really do one thing and do it well. I haven't been in a movie since I started Top Chef 5 years ago. My last film was for the BBC. I would love to do another film. It just has to be the right one and work with the schedule, which is not always easy. I'm just thankful for my job on Top Chef at this point.
Of course. Fatima, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care, Matthew.
All right, you too.
From 2012 and still waiting for Top Chef to come to Indianapolis. That's Padma Lachmi, because I can. So if you enjoy these ridiculous, wonderfully ridiculous interviews and all the content here, grab a pencil, round the horn, my thoughts. If I've kept you company over the last, my gosh, 14 years, and especially during lockdown, the last three, show your support. Go to WFYI.org/give and support WFYI, support film sociology, and all things public radio goodness. All right, friends, you know it, you love it, words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie, you deserve it, and go to WFYI.org/give to show your support to film sociology. We'll try this again next week. Thanks for listening. WFYI.org/give. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!